Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give away some tickets for the River Dogs game tonight. It's a Thirsty Thursday at Joe Riley Park, and we got tickets to give away for you to go have some fun tonight, watch some baseball, the first place River Dogs. We'll do that coming up in just a little bit. Also, Urban Meyer with some comments about Trevor Lawrence and some great tight ends with some comments about Tim Tebow. Get to some of the drama coming up here in just a moment on the Morrow Midday Show. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always find it on demand. The podcast is available however you listen to your podcast. You can just search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can also find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com at our show page or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. But we closed out last hour talking about this wing shortage. Chicken wings. It's a big issue. So now you have to settle for chicken thighs. I don't know if that has the same, and I don't know if that interests you as much. When you're talking about getting together for a football game, you're looking forward to the buffalo wings. Now you got to go with thighs. That's not as good. But it's just the latest thing that we have fallen short of here from the pandemic in this country that we're running short on. Really what it comes down to, right, is the whole pricing. They just rather pay less and get more thighs than wings. Of course, originally it was toilet paper, which, speaking of the River Dogs, Saturday night, because of the toilet paper shortage a year ago, the River Dogs, they'll be having you could TP the ballpark on Saturday. So that'll be fun. Go watch a baseball game and throw around some toilet paper without the guilt of it. Although if you're doing it in the first place, you probably don't feel guilty about TPing someone's house.
Okay, and are you going to walk around doing Beavis as Cornholio?
I am the great Cornholio. Need TP for my bungalow.
We can. I'm sure they would love to have that on the broadcast. You could come and do that impression on the broadcast Saturday. They wouldn't bring me back for Sunday for the final game of my fill-in duty this week with the River Dogs. So we had the toilet paper short. I may participate Saturday. Right? I'll go grab the toilet paper out of the press box bathroom. I'll throw it out the window. I don't think I ever participated in TPing a house. I just couldn't do it. That's the worst. You got to clean that up the next day. Right? Egging someone. I've never egged anyone's house. How could you throw eggs at someone's house?
You didn't do much growing up, did you?
Oh, we did plenty, but not that stuff. Now, we did Ding Dong Ditch. We did that. We did all sorts of pranks, but it was more, I don't know, it wasn't like that stuff.
So Halloween was rather boring, huh?
Yeah, we actually didn't do Mischief Night the night before. We never did much. I was more about the candy, to be honest with you. I wanted a candy. I didn't really care about TPing someone's house. Give me your king-size Kit Kat bars instead. I'll be satisfied. But we had the toilet paper shortage. Obviously, hand sanitizer, cleaning supplies, canned food at the beginning of the pandemic. But there's also been odd things along the ways, like sewing machines, jigsaw puzzles. I mean, obviously, things that you're using as you're locked down. The kettlebells, because people want to work out at home. The PlayStations went off the shelves. That was crazy. Laptops. Chlorine right now. We have a shortage of chlorine. People are using their pools more, I guess, or maybe you want to be more careful. If you're having people over at the pool or for public pools, they want to make sure, like, oh, we got to really douse this thing in chlorine. Bikes. I'm looking at the list here of things that we've had a shortage of. Obviously, wood has been the latest thing, lumber, steel, stuff like that. May not be much of a surprise, but we had a shortage, I guess. I didn't hear about this one, but a shortage of condoms. You're stuck inside. Gold. Had a shortage during all this. Aluminum cans, and now apparently chicken wings is the latest. So we gotta get this solved before the football season. When you get together, I think chicken wings, I'll have to look this up. Chicken wings is probably number one on the list of football food. right? Whether you're tailgating, you're watching at home, Super Bowl party. What Super Bowl party does not have chicken wings? So we have 65 days until football season to try to figure this out and get the wings back at Wingstop and all these other places instead of thighs. That's not quite the same. I mean, you do get more meat. I got no problem. I'll eat a thigh, a drumstick, a flat. I'm not even the biggest wing guy. I actually think I prefer flats anyways. But thighs, that may be taking it too far. So we're 65 days away from the college football season. The NFL season will begin shortly after that. We just had OTAs and training camp, and or mini camp, I should say, training camps coming up. Trevor Lawrence is going through his first season, of course, with the Jacksonville Jaguars, big star for the Jags. How have things been going so far? Let's get to some audio. His head coach in Jacksonville, Urban Meyer, which, by the way, it's still weird to me to think of that. After he played for Dabo, now he's playing for Urban. It feels weird to say that's his head coach. Trevor Lawrence playing for Urban Meyer now and doing it at the NFL level. But here's what Urban told the press in Jacksonville about Trevor Lawrence so far here through his first NFL offseason.
That is a great question because that's reality. You know, that you look at the step, you know, it's from high school to college, everything gets a little faster. From college to pro, everything gets much faster. And so that's, we're coaching him through that. We did have a couple bad practices where, you know, the balls were kind of trying to pound him in there. And it is a much faster game because you're, it's the best of the best on that side of the ball. So that's something we're coaching him through, but it is a concern.
Urban Meyer talking about Trevor Lawrence. That pace, that speed is always what you hear about and what you get concerned with. Like Urban said, the step up from high school to college and then from college to the NFL in this case. Not only does the game speed up, but the higher you go, the faster it speeds up. Like the jump from high school to college isn't as drastic as the jump from college to the NFL. And Trevor Lawrence played against the best of the best, but also when you talk about the ACC and some of the teams he got to play there, now you're going up against all these freaks in the NFL. Speed would be the concern. As they say in college football, you throw to the open man. In the NFL, you have to throw the man open, which is always the concern for guys that come from great programs, like Alabama quarterbacks. Mac Jones is just always throwing to wide-open wide receivers. In the NFL, you have to have a little more precision, timing. You have to be able to anticipate things. You got to throw a guy open. You have to fit into a tight window. You have to place it perfectly so that even if he's covered, you give your receiver a chance, the only chance to make a play on the ball. That's oftentimes the biggest adjustments for quarterback in the NFL, the speed of the game. Guys coming at you a little bit quicker in the backfield. They're faster. They'll catch up to you. Right? A lot of athletic quarterbacks find that out. They can outrun a defense in college. Then you get to the NFL and you realize, man, even these defensive linemen, right, are tracking me down. Everyone's much quicker, much faster. They're better athletes. They're more talented. And you have to adjust. It takes a little time for that speed and to feel comfortable, to adjust to the pace. Now, in regards to Trevor Lawrence in particular, for as good of a prospecting quarterback as he is, I imagine he'll be able to get a handle on it relatively quickly or easily. I think for Urban Meyer, a lot of the comments you'll hear about Trevor Lawrence more are keeping him from getting any sort of big head, making sure that their star quarterback is grounded, which doesn't seem like it would be a concern with Trevor Lawrence because he's always been a laid-back guy. He's not really an arrogant, cocky type of quarterback. Like, even Joe Burrow comes off as a little cocky, very confident in himself. Trevor Lawrence, I'm sure, is very confident in himself, but outwardly, right, he's a laid-back, chill dude. But he is the number one pick, was the number one guy coming out of high school, won at Clemson, coming in as the savior at Jacksonville. Everything's probably come easy to him, and you want to make sure that you know, you're keeping him grounded so that he continues to work hard, get ready, realize, like, hey, this is the NFL. This is no longer Clemson. Right? You're the new guy in town. You're the rookie. You got to continue to work hard to become one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I imagine we'll hear more comments like this from Urban throughout the offseason and even into the year. That, yes, he'll compliment his quarterback, but he'll also say things like this. Oh, we got to work on this. We got to work on that. Or, we have to get better in this area to make sure that his rookie quarterback continues to work hard to get to where he wants to be. Because really, Urban's career could depend on it, his NFL career. If he works out in the NFL, in large part, it will be because Trevor Lawrence has success. Now, for Trevor Lawrence, for his part, he was talking to the media and was asked about this. And here's Trevor Lawrence's thoughts on how things have gone so far in his first NFL offseason with the Jaguars.
Yeah, I want to just master the offense. I want to have, you know, complete control and know everything and be comfortable. I mean, you can't really play free and play really well if you don't know what you're doing. So that's the goal, is just to master the offense by the time training camp comes around. So in training camp, we really can focus everything forward on being the best team we can come August 14th and then going on into the regular season as well. So that's the plan. And it starts with the quarterback. Obviously, I have to be ready, and I'm going to do everything I can to ensure that is the case. So I'm excited to get started, and I think we've had a great past 3 weeks, and it's been really good work.
Trevor Lawrence talking about his first few weeks with the Jaguars. And what he said is also the other important part. You got to learn that offense like the back of your hand. You got to be able to read a defense well. Patrick Mahomes even said, hey, it took me till, you know, it's my second year to be able to read a defense. Because you can't be out there thinking. You can't be out there thinking as you're trying to process the play of, wait a minute, what is that guy supposed to be doing? Where is he going to cut? Who's going where? It has to become instinctual. Right? They always say, I grew up playing basketball. That's what they always say, muscle memory. You have to practice enough that it just becomes muscle memory. You know what to do with the basketball. You don't have to think about it. You can read a situation without even thinking. You know what to do or where to go with the basketball. And it just comes from practice, from playing, from dribbling the ball so often that it feels like it's on a string, right? It's attached to your hand. And it's the same idea when these quarterbacks come in the league. Learn that offense. Figure out the defense so that you're not out there thinking. You're just reacting. Now, what I find more interesting, the other big story in Jacksonville is this whole Tim Tebow thing. And it's funny, right? Anytime Tim Tebow caught every pass thrown his way. That's great. Right? But we get all sorts of stories about Tebow. Oh, Tebow didn't get as many reps as the other tight ends today. Everything molehills turn into mountains covering Tim Tebow. But there is a little bit of drama, if you will, in that we have this tight end camp this year. Greg Olsen, George Kittle are putting on a tight end camp where they're getting all these tight ends together. And, you know, it's just an area for a place for tight ends to work together and improve and get some coaching and just to help tight ends in the league. Tim Tebow was not invited. So here was George Kittle and Greg Olsen talking about Tim Tebow trying to make it as a tight end and not getting an invitation to their tight end camp.
I wish nothing but the best for Tim Tebow, and I hope he has a fantastic season playing tight end. But it's hard for me to not invite, like, a backup tight end on, let's say, the New York Giants, as opposed to inviting a guy that just started playing tight end in the position. Because the thing is, we do have limited spots. I wish I could make it a brand. Every NFL tight end could come. It's accessible to everybody. But, like, what we tried to do this year is we wanted, like, to pay for everything for all the tight ends to come to kind of make it a special, like, event for all tight ends. And so – like we booked up an entire hotel, like they're completely out of rooms. We have every room taken. So hopefully in the next years to come, we can make it like open and available to everybody.
Here's what used to piss me off as a tight end in the NFL. And maybe George feels the same way, but like there's one position in the NFL that gets all the, I never played the position or even played the sport of football before, right? I played rugby. I played basketball. I played Australian rules football. Right, like there's all these guys that never played tight end, let alone football. And then when they want to make the transition to trying in the NFL, they're like, yeah, let's just make that guy a tight end. And I always used to take offense to that.
You have to be good at everything. Like you can't just, like you can't, you, yeah, you can be an elite route runner. You can catch the ball really well. You can run really well. But then if you can't like hold your own in the run game and you can't like take in hit in the face by a 300-pound defensive end, then like you kind of have, they kind of have to like, call plays around you instead of like you being able to be the focal point. But like, you have to be very good at pass pro, running routes, setting the edge, being able to crack on a safety, being able to sip block a defensive end. You have to be in the backfield for protection like a running back. Where, like you just kind of do everything.
George Kittle and Greg Olsen talking about Tim Tebow, the tight end position in the tight end camp. Their excuse or their reasoning for why Tim Tebow wasn't invited makes a ton of sense. Right? You only have limited spots. Why are you going to take him instead of a legitimate tight end? An actual tight end that could contribute to a team, a backup at some team instead of Tim Tebow just trying to make a roster. But what I found most interesting from that clip, and that was on some sort of podcast that they were talking about it, was that soundbite from Greg Olsen. He's going to start working in broadcasting now. Great guy. Everyone always has good things to say about him. He's always been, you know, about the community and charity and a great person. You never hear him, you know, act out of line. That was a little even harsher for Greg Olsen from what you normally hear. Right, where he said, well, pissed me off, and it goes on to talk about the tight end position. Even that is a little bit of a hot take for Greg Olsen. He's usually, you know, always very, I guess, takes the high road. You won't hear him criticize many people, right? Always is very well-spoken and kind and all that sort of stuff. But what he said was very true. We always think with the tight end position that just if they're an athlete, right, they can do it. We always used to have that conversation about LeBron. Imagine LeBron James as a tight end. Oh, he'd be a great tight end. I could understand why if you're Greg Olsen, you hear that and think, like, you have no idea how hard this position is. You think you could take somebody from the NBA, drop them in here, and they'd be a Pro Bowl tight end? What are you talking about? Because what's funny is the tight end position is the one position that has to do everything, right? You have to block, catch, you run routes. You can be stationed in the backfield, at the end of the line of scrimmage, in the slot, maybe even out wide. And you got to do a little bit of everything as the tight end. You have to block these 300-pounders, and then you have to go out and catch a pass, and you got to run block and pass protect and do all sorts of stuff. Sometimes guys, Jonnu Smith will even get a handoff. The Titans used to use their tight end in the running game. He used to run the football. And they're doing it all, and we always say that. And sometimes it works out. I mean, like, you know, Tony Gonzalez was a basketball player, a Hall of Fame tight end. But you always hear these comments. Whenever you see somebody that is playing basketball in college that's an athlete, it's like, oh, yeah. In fact, a former Citadel basketball player just signed on to be a tight end at Virginia Tech because he's like 6'8", and he's athletic. So there are some cases. People have a reason why we do have those conversations or make those comments, because there is some proof along the way that you can take an athlete and they can develop into a great tight end. You know, when I was in high school, and that's not the NFL level, but our basketball star at one point became a tight end for the football team and was like their number one wide receiver just because he was tall, big, athletic. He could run down the field. He could jump. He could catch the ball. So there are cases where it could work out, but I could understand why somebody like Greg Olsen gets annoyed every time he hears that, every time you see a great athlete and think, oh, just make him a tight end. Right, he'll be great as a tight end. And you don't really understand all the work that goes into it or the many things that tight ends have to do. It's similar, somewhat similar to this industry. We're all sports fans. If you hang out, if you listen to the show, you're obviously a big sports fan. And people always think of this industry of how easy it is. And I'm not going to tell you this is the hardest job. It's not. I've never worked a day in my life. I don't consider it a job. It's great. Broadcasting games, talking sports for a couple of hours every afternoon. We're not digging ditches. But it's the type of job or industry that everyone thinks they can do it because you're a big sports fan and you sit around at home and you talk about sports with your friends. But then it's like, all right, well, you have 3 hours to fill. And if you ever put that person in a microphone, right, they'll give you a good maybe 5 minutes. Then you run out of whatever you have to say. Or, you know, you don't have enough points to make, or you can't make it interesting, or whatever it may be. You don't have strong opinions. I'm not saying this is some sort of difficult job, especially in the big in the scope of things. There's a lot harder jobs out there. But I do think a lot of people think broadcasting in general is a lot easier than maybe it is. Even just play-by-play of a game. You're sitting at home, you're watching it, you think, oh, this guy's terrible. I could do it better. Then you get behind the microphone, and, you know, it's very hard for just the average Joe to try to keep up with the play-by-play of a football or a basketball game. It's not the hardest job around, but it may be a little more difficult than people think. And it's the same idea what Greg Olsen is saying for tight ends. Like, you can't just take any athlete, throw them on the football field, and think they're going to be a great tight end. Like a Tim Tebow, or we always talked about it with LeBron James, or any of these other athletes. You know, Mike Trout, any of these other athletes. Aaron Judge is another one, because he's tall and he's athletic. People say, imagine Aaron Judge as a tight end. Well, there's a little more to it than just being an athlete. I found that interesting from Greg Olsen. Coming up, well, we put the finishing touches, the final chapter. We've been talking about this for the last about 2 weeks. We have the final chapter of the Bill Burr barbecue saga. In case you're unfamiliar, I'll remind you of what that is and then put the finishing touches on it from the DA show. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the final chapter of the Bill Burr barbecue saga. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN. We'll be giving away tickets in a few minutes to the Charleston River Dogs game tonight. Stay tuned for that. Tickets to give away for Thirsty Thursday. You go have a good time, watch a good baseball team, a first-place team, take on the Braves minor league affiliate with $1 beers. I don't know how much. What more do you need to be sold? Come on. You got a first-place team against Braves minor leaguers with cheap beer. Should be a beautiful night. Good ballpark. You can even listen to the game. Hear a familiar voice. Tonight, Thirsty Thursday, we'll be giving away some tickets. Hey, you ever have a problem around the house? You think, I can't fix that? Don't worry, because the Canty Foundation specialist can. And you can check them out online at CantyCanFixIt.com or give them a call, 843-484-3625, because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. And this time of year, let me tell you, last night was beautiful. This morning when I walked out, to come to work. Beautiful morning. Hopefully it stays that way. This time of year, it's beautiful out. You're outside in the yard. The kids are running around. Maybe you're in your flip-flops. You got to protect your toes. If you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, a driveway, patio, pool deck, the Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of those little toes. Contact them for a free estimate today, CantyCanFixIt.com, or call them at 843-484-3625. Just not much worse than stubbing a toe. Although I got to tell you, last night I think I landed on the DL my first day with the River Dogs. I went to go use the bathroom just before airtime, you know, because so I don't have to worry about getting up during the game. You're seated there for about 3.5 hours. And the bathroom, the lock was one of those, like, metal bars that you slide into the hole type of deal. You slide it over to lock. And it was not rusty, but, you know, maybe could use a little, WB-40? UB-40, right, the great band. They could use a little UB-40 on there. And so I had to really pull on it, and I slid it out of the lock to unlock the door, and it caught my finger. It ripped the skin right off my index finger. Kind of gnarly looking. And it started bleeding and everything. And, like, so much so, you could see, you know what, you ever tear your skin off and you could see the skin underneath that is, like, much pinker because it hasn't been exposed to anything? That's what I was looking at. And I thought, oh, boy. So I started the broadcast by holding a paper towel on my finger to stop the bleeding while I'm there, you know, broadcasting the game. We're good to go now, but it was pretty nasty. Didn't hurt too much, but the skin came right off. Flew off my finger, this thing. What came flying back and caught my finger right in that lock. I'll have to use a different bathroom tonight. I can't even use a bathroom without injuring myself. So, if you've been listening to the show, you know about this Bill Burr barbecue saga. We talked about this on the show last week. Damon Amendolara is a host of a sports show every morning on CBS Sports, which is aired nationally. And he also hosts a show on Sunday mornings, which you can hear in the area during the football season specifically on Sunday mornings on CBS Radio nationally as well. And so Damon came to town with his wife to vacation here in Charleston. And we had contacted him on social media. And then Bill Burr from Fox, not the comedian, right? We had him on the show. We talked about that. Not the comedian, but the news anchor you can watch on Fox here in Charleston each night. Bill Burr offered to take him out to lunch at Rodney Scott. And so we played this whole thing out. Damon talked about it on his show afterwards. Then we had Bill come on last week, my final show before vacation, a week ago, when he was talking about going out to lunch with Damon, but the thought in his head that he thought maybe he signed up for more he could chew. He bit off more than he could chew. He offered to get Damon lunch, pay for lunch at Rodney Scott's. Then he realized, wait a minute, is it his entire radio staff? Are there going to be listeners of the show? Is he coming down here to do a show? Am I going to have to pay for about 100 people? And we had Bill on the show last week to talk about this, the anxiety-filled car ride over, wondering what he was stepping into, and if it was a situation where he would have to try to pay for a bunch of people, how do you get out of that? So we had Bill on the show last week to give his perspective, to talk about this potentially awkward situation. You try to do something nice, you almost walk yourself into this brutal situation. And he was trying to get other people to chip in. He thought he was going to have to buy lunch for, you know, a dozen people. Anyways, after Bill was on this show with us a week ago, Damon heard the audio. They played it on their show and reacted to that. So it's the final chapter. Then we put an end to this story that we've been talking about for the past about 2 weeks. But the Bill Burr barbecue saga, the final chapter, we have two clips from they call it the DA show. Damon Amendolara talking about Bill's appearance here on the Mora Midday Show last week. Here's what Damon said, first setting the scene once again and leading into the conversation we had on the Mora Midday Show last week. Here's what Damon Amendolara said on the DA Show.
When I was down in Charleston with my wife last week, I had a listener of ours who also works in media named Bill Burr. Now that's the name of a comedian, but this is Bill Burr on Fox News in Charleston, does local news. And he was so great, he reached out to me and said, you know, love to show you around or buy you lunch or what have you, because I had said, what's the best barbecue in town? And this was virtue of the ESPN Radio 98.9 FM affiliate down in South Carolina, who reached out to me when I had mentioned on the show that I was going to be down there for a short vacation. So Bill actually met up with me. We went to an amazing barbecue joint that was really, really fun, really great. Rodney Scott's Barbecue, which is an institution down there. We met, My wife was there, so the three of us just sat down, chatted. Really great lunch, great conversation, great company. I didn't realize, though, that I had misled Bill because I had said, we'll meet you there, and Bill didn't know that it was just me and my wife. I said, we, and he thought it was going to be an entire crew, radio crew. He joined 98.9 and Morrow in the middays this week to discuss, and this was him and Luke Morrow discussing this anxiety situation. Let me play the clip for you.
Now, they played the clip, but you heard it on the show here last week. We don't need to play the audio for you again because it was about a 2.5-minute clip they played of Bill here on the show last week talking about the potentially awkward situation. Now, I love DA. I appreciate the shout-out on national radio, but, man, I don't understand. He must have saw that name somewhere. It must be listed somewhere. People get the show wrong all the time. He called it Morrow in the Midday. I'll tell you, people in this building, co-workers, always refer to it as Morrow in the Midday. I don't know why. Now, my last name is Morrow. The show is on in the midday. I mean, it's the Morrow Midday Show, so it's not too far off. It's not like they called the Super Dave Show. It's not like they called it something completely different. They just kind of move the words around. But this is just something really odd to me that people in this own building, co-workers, always say it. There'll be, like, emails with clients or something, and they'll say, you know, oh, the Morrow in the Midday Show. And no, it's the Morrow Midday Show, not in the, just the Morrow Midday Show. But I appreciate the shout-out from DA, and, you know, he's a fellow Paisan from the Northeast, so he also got the pronunciation correct. Just didn't really call the show by the proper name. It's the Morrow Midday Show, not Morrow's in the Midday. For some reason, that's more. I hear that more than I hear the actual name of the show. Now, that was the scene setter from the DA show about this whole situation. By the way, I don't think I've ever been to Rodney Scott's. Joe, have you eaten barbecue at Rodney Scott's?
Cannot say I have.
Yeah, I never have. I've heard great things. I've never actually been. And I've been to a bunch of barbecue joints around here. I've never been to Rodney Scott's. So I now need a reason after talking about this for 2 weeks to get over there. That was the scene setter from DA. They then played the clip of Bill Burr on our show last week. This is on the DA show on CBS Radio. And this second cut was their reaction to what Bill said here on the show about, you know, if he showed up, saw that it's about 10 people he actually had to pay lunch for instead of one or two, how he was going to get out of it. Here was DA's reaction to Bill Burr's side of the story.
So, I misled Bill, such a nice guy, by saying we, that he was driving over to the restaurant thinking, oh my God, I've got to buy Mraz lunch too, and I've got to buy Pete the Body lunch too, and I've got to buy Bogish lunch. And he even wondered, is this going to be a radio remote? And there's going to be like 100 listeners that I've offered to pay for lunch. So imagine the heart racing driving over to the restaurant thinking I might have to buy, worst case scenario, for 100 people. I would never do that to somebody I don't know.
Imagine the glee and the relief inside Bill when he shows up and it's just you two. It's just you and the bourbon pal. I mean, that might be the best moment of his life. I don't know, married, kids, whatever, but he was dreading hundreds of dollars in barbecue lunch because Sean might be there, but instead it was nice and easy.
I went with a pulled pork platter, which was, I think, $14.95, if I'm not mistaken. And I would have gone bigger if it was, you know, because I really wanted to try everything on the menu, but if a guy was paying, if somebody was paying for me, I'm not going to go crazy. But Mraz, I feel like you wouldn't have cared. I feel like you would have went with like a $30 lunch.
You're a nice guy paying. Not my price. Look, if you can't cut it, you better ask me and I'll give you money. But I am going to take advantage. And I'm going to go through that. Rodney Scott's. I'm going to go through that menu. Yeah. And I'm going to make sure I try every cut of meat. And that's what I'm doing for lunch. And here you go. Maybe I'll leave the tip. But yeah, absolutely. I'm raking that guy over the coals and eating everything.
No nicest question. Guy ever offers to come and meet you. He's a total stranger up until that point in time. Listens to the show, offers to buy you lunch, and you are, quote, raking him over the coals.
Look, if he's a true listener to the show, then as far as I'm concerned, when he offered, he knew what he was getting himself into if he was there. Otherwise, you're not a true listener to the show because you should know what you're getting into if I'm coming to eat.
So he said if it was going to be 10 people, he would have said, no, I can't do it. At what point do you cut off? I offer to buy lunch, but not for this many people. What's that number?
3, 4. I think you got to assume, if he was assuming crew, it better be the crew of the moment. It becomes like 10 people, you're out. And I think at that point, you do the old, hey, guys, I'll be right back. Got to run and get my wallet in the car and then never see us again.
Okay, you're going to Irish goodbye him.
That's what I would do. If I was him, that's what I would have done. He was nice for conversation, leaves us with the check, and we never hear from him again, and he goes somewhere else.
I think three-person lunch you probably have to take care of. I think anything more than that, you're probably not on the hook for it. Four, you're kind of allowed to pass the buck. So,
the DA show breaking down our conversation with Bill Burr last week. Imagine an Irish goodbye. Right, a listener of the show reaches out, hey, you're in town, I want to take you out to lunch. You go out to lunch, you have a good meal. Oh, I got to go grab my wallet in the car. And they just get in the car and drive off. I owe a lunch to Gary. I'll be paying that up soon. I don't think I'm going to try to pull the Irish goodbye. I've done that in other settings. I'll just see, too many people to say goodbye or whatever. They're talking. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm leaving. But not when you're out to eat or not when you're supposed to be treating somebody to lunch. Joe, have you ever chewed and screwed? You ever eat? And skip out on the bill.
No, I have not.
My father and I did it once by accident. I think I've told the story before. But it was the type of place that you pay after you eat. Which I, one of those, I mean, that's how you usually do it at restaurants. But this was, you order at the counter. But you didn't pay when you ordered at the counter. Right? You went up to the counter, you order your food, you sit down, they bring it out to you. Then you eat, you have to go back up to the counter and pay. And that's a little, that's annoying. I'm already at the counter, let me pay. You know what it is, you know what I ordered. You know, like when you go to a sandwich shop, you grab a sandwich, you're not going to add on to that order. And if you do, then just pay again when you order something else at the counter. So anyways, we were in a rush. We were trying to make it to a basketball game. So we stopped off, we grabbed a sandwich, we sat down, we had the sandwich, and my father forgot. He assumed he had just paid, right? You pay at the counter when you order the food. So we were in a hurry. We got up, we left. He realized in the car ride to the basketball game, wait a minute, I never paid. So he called the restaurant and he said, hey, I was just in there with my son. I forgot to pay. They said, yeah. And we thought that tall guy left here without paying. Right, my dad, he's 6'7". He can't hide in a crowded room. So he stands out. So anyways, he went in the next day and paid them for the food. And it's a place that we would go all the time. That was the only time. I could never bring myself to do that. Right, to eat somewhere and then just skip out on the bill. Especially if you're offering to pay lunch and then you leave them with the bill. But if you offer to buy somebody lunch, it is fair game. They could get whatever they want. So when I take Gary, a listener of the show, out to lunch, and I will be doing that, I have to get past this week. Got a lot going on. You can order the whole menu if you want. That's what I signed up for, by having to pay up for lunch. Fair game at that point. Appreciate the DA show playing a portion of our show and talking about the Mara Midday Show, even if it was referred to as Morrow in the Middays on their morning show on CBS Radio. Coming up. What do the latest hires in the NBA, what could they potentially mean for Dawn Staley? We'll get to that coming up. But I've been talking about it all afternoon. We have these tickets to give away for the Charleston River Dogs game tonight. It's a thirsty Thursday, so yeah, I got $1 beers, you got a first-place team, you have Braves prospects on the other side, and you also have DJ Natty is going to be in the house from right here in this building as well. It's the Kirkman Broadcasting Takeover at Joe Riley Park tonight. But a 7:05 first pitch. I got a pair of tickets for tonight's game. I got two pairs. Let's try to give them away here before we go. You have to come pick them up. I have the tickets here. Pick them up and then go to the game tonight for Thursday night. Maybe I could try to set up something where I leave them at will call for you if you can't make it here. But two tickets to tonight's River Dogs game, Thirsty Thursday. Be the third caller now. We'll give you the two tickets. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now will give you two tickets to tonight's Charleston River Dogs game. Thirsty Thursday. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What do the recent hires in the NBA potentially mean for Dawn Staley or even Becky Hammon? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. And congrats to our winner, Gary in Somerville, for winning a pair of tickets to tonight's River Dogs game. We'll be giving away another pair of tickets shortly to tonight's Thirsty Thursday at Joe Riley Park with the River Dogs and Green Jackets. Stay tuned for that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show. Still a few openings left in the NBA. Dawn Staley's name has been mentioned in the past in regards to the NBA in this offseason with the Portland Trailblazers as a potential candidate. In fact, the Trailblazers were interested in speaking with her. They reached out to Ray Tanner. I don't know if they've had any sort of conversation or still plan to at this point, but she is somebody that was at least on the list of the Portland Trailblazers. Becky Hammon is another one, an assistant of the Spurs, who could become the first female coach in the NBA, first female head coach in the NBA. According to reports, the Pelicans' ownership wants her to be the head coach, but the front office doesn't necessarily agree. Maybe she winds up there. But with the hires that we have seen in the last 24 hours in the NBA, Rick Carlisle hired by the Pacers, and the Celtics have their new coach, Ime Udoka, from the Brooklyn Nets. What could this mean for Dawn Staley's chances of making it to the NBA, or even Becky Hammon becoming a head coach in the NBA? Here was Woj on SportsCenter last night talking about the Celtics hire. And I think a couple of things he says here show what the hiring cycle is like now in the NBA. Here's Woj on the Celtics' new head coach.
Brad Stevens in this process, I think he really saw Ime Udoka separate himself pretty quickly from what was a very good field, the kind of leader he wanted, certainly his pedigree in San Antonio, Philly, and Brooklyn. Having coached a lot of elite players in the league, reputation for being able to build relationships with them, hold them accountable, and just tactically a very sound coach. And I think for Brad Stevens, this was an important hire for him. It is not easy to come in as a head coach when the guy you're replacing is now your boss. And I think this is a partnership that Brad Stevens and Ime Udoka really believe can work. And the fact that he had coached several Celtics and the Team USA World Cup team as an assistant with Greg Popovich, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, all gave rave reviews about Ime Udoka.
Woj on SportsCenter last night talking about the new Celtics head coach. And a few things he said there stood out to me. He said, you know, the fact that he's coached players in the league, the fact that he has shown the ability to build relationships with those players. And then the last part, where the three best players of the Celtics signed off on him. They went to those three guys. They were familiar with him. And they said, yeah, we'll play for him. We'd like him to be our head coach. All right, let's hire him. Now, why does that stand out? What does that mean for somebody like a Dawn Staley? Male or female, doesn't matter. Right? Dawn's coming from the college game. She has no connection to these players. And not even just for this offseason. I'm not talking in particular about Portland, but for years to come, if we continue to talk about this, and, you know, could Dawn Staley be someone who makes the jump to the NBA? She has not had the ability to coach these players, to build those relationships. Will players sign off on that idea, not having that experience? Even John Beilein came from the college game. He was out in half a year. It was a disaster in Cleveland. And the other part in all this is what we're seeing. The two coaches hired this NBA offseason, both happened to be hired in the last 24 hours, both were two guys who played in the NBA as well. Now, Carlisle, most of the guys in the league probably don't remember his playing days. But he did play in the league and certainly has been a coach for a long time and won a championship. And Udoka played in the league and has been a coach for a long time. And they've been NBA guys, but most specifically, players. And if you look at the NBA right now, the four teams that are left, three of the four coaches are former NBA players. The one exception is Mike Budenholzer, who is probably going to lose his job if the Bucks lose this series. They're down 1-0. They may not win this series, so he would be on the losing side, and then he would probably be losing his job. Other coaches in the postseason. I mean, Doc Rivers was just eliminated, obviously a former player. Steve Nash was just eliminated, a former player. Now, that's become the new trend. In fact, maybe it isn't all that new because in the last 40 years, only five championships in the last 40 years featured a matchup where one of the coaches was not a former NBA player. So in 35 of the last 40 NBA championships, at least one of the two coaches in that championship was a former NBA player. It's just what the players in the NBA prefer, someone who's been there before. They're more relatable. They've been through it. They know what it's like. Right? You always hear that. You don't know what it's like when you try to offer some advice or critique somebody, but maybe you've never done it before. Where you haven't been in that situation before, and they'll say that back to you. Maybe your kids say that to you. You don't know what it's like. You didn't have social media when you were growing up, whatever it is that you're talking about. you become a lot more relatable when you can share that same experience. Hey, I've been in this position. I was in your shoes. I went through it. Here's what I did. Here's how I handled it. Here's how you can be even better, whatever it may be that you're talking about. And the NBA players, they have more respect for coaches. They'll listen more to those coaches who have been in their shoes, who have gone through it before. The two coaches hired in the last 24 hours, former NBA players. Three of the last four coaches remaining, former NBA players. Almost every NBA championship of the last four decades included a coach who was a former NBA player. That's just how it goes in the NBA. And we're at a point now we know the NBA is more controlled by its stars than any other sport. So what the players think is most important. That's why the Celtics went to their three best players and said, hey, what do you think of this guy? Should we hire him? Right? Other sports don't work like that. That's why Deshaun Watson was all ticked off and Aaron Rodgers was ticked off as well. Most companies don't work like that. They don't come to you and ask you who they should hire to be your boss. But in the NBA, it's all about the players. They have to sign off. Would they sign off on a coach that not only is coming from college but didn't play in the NBA, they have no experience with? Would that be of interest? Becky Hammon has the advantage of at least being in the NBA, working on a staff. She is building relationships with some of those players. And at a certain point, one of those players may be a star of another team and say, oh, yeah, right, I played with her in San Antonio. I liked playing for her. She could be our head coach. Sign off on that. Even if she didn't play in the league, at least she's involved in the league, building some sort of relationship. But it's almost an evergreen topic. It's a conversation of the last 18 months and will continue to be one. You know, could Dawn Staley make the jump not only to the men's game, but the professional ranks of the men's game, the NBA? If there was ever a coach to do it, it would be her. But you need the players to sign off. You need that opportunity. You need the other side to be interested if she's interested in going to the NBA. And we've seen the trend in the NBA, the coaches, mostly former players. The coaches that have the most success, former players. The coaches that are getting the jobs these days, former players. That's what the players are most interested in. Guys who played in the league as well and know what it's like. Instead of somebody who never had the opportunity to play in the league. And she's a professional basketball player herself, but wasn't the NBA. Right now she's coaching in college, coaching women. I've always said, right now I've campaigned to make her the men's basketball coach at South Carolina. So it's not a Dawn Staley thing. It's more of regardless who the coach is. If they didn't play in the league, most often the players are not going to be interested in them being their coach because they didn't play in the league. They don't know what it's like. How can they coach me? They never played in the league. It's kind of simple-minded thinking, but it's really the way that the NBA has gone. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Well, she's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. But she always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner. She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady. And the lady is mine. But she's never in the way.
Wrapping up hour two. Here on the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We have another pair of tickets to give away to the River Dogs game tonight for a Thirsty Thursday. We'll do that in just a little bit. You can always join the conversation as well, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Before we go here at the top of the hour, let's head on over to the phones, check in with Super Dave who's with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on, Mr. Luke?
Not much. What's up?
I think she'll stay home here in South Carolina and stay with the ladies over there.
Dawn Staley will stay with the Gamecocks.
Yep, because she's at home. If she's happy, then we don't want her to leave here. And she's proven to be a great coach because the women has really come a long way and come up with, like, won championships. So I think Carolina do whatever they can do to keep her.
Oh, I'm sure they would. They wouldn't want to lose her. She is a great coach. She's been great at what she's done and has built that program. She's one of the best coaches in women's basketball. But if she wants to make the jump, an NBA team interested, and she's interested in coaching in the NBA, then regardless what the Gamecocks may want to do, especially when you talk about history, if she has the chance to become the first female head coach in NBA history. You'd be paving the way for hopefully a lot of other women behind you. You'd set a great example for young women. It'd be a lot more than just coaching basketball. Not only would you be at the highest level, the NBA, but also doing it on the men's side as the first female to do so. That would be appealing. Right, and last year was talking about Philadelphia with her being able to return home as well. That's another part of it. Yeah, the Gamecocks, of course, do not want to lose her. But if she has any interest, eventually if she gets an opportunity, maybe she'll make that move. Will she be given the opportunity? That's the better question, even if she was interested. Because as we laid out last segment, usually it comes down to people that played in the league. Right, it's like the Seinfeld episode when George is trying to figure out what he's going to do after he quits his job, and he's trying to think of a new job, and he says, yeah, I could be a broadcaster. I always make interesting observations when we're watching the games on TV. And Jerry says, yeah, but those jobs usually go to former athletes. And George says, well, that's not really fair. And Jerry says, yeah, I know, but that's how it goes. All right, and it's true. All the analysts, not the play-by-play guys, but all the analysts are usually former players. They're the ones getting all those jobs. That's right. Took 2 hours to get to a Seinfeld reference today. But same idea with the coaches in the NBA. It may not be fair, George, but usually those jobs go to guys who played in the league as well. Because they've been there and done that, and it's an easier way to form that connection with the stars. And we know in the NBA, if you can't get along with your star players, you're not going to be successful. You need the star to be in your corner, and that's one way to do it. By having that shared experience of having played in the NBA as well. Speaking of the NBA, coming up, the Atlanta Hawks continue this impressive run. Why it's good for the NBA, why it reminds me of Kevin Costner's For the Love of the Game movie. We'll do that coming up. And we do have another pair of tickets to give away to the River Dogs game tonight. We'll do that early in the final hour coming up. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.